we are never going to be producing thousands of a single product, a single style. It's just not going to happen. And the reason why we don't want that is because we want the artisans to continue to innovate, to create new designs, to leverage their past, to create a fusion of different cultures if that's what they want to do.
The world of marketing is changing, and to keep pace with it, you need to create a new point of view that is original, authentic, and engaging. How to go about doing that? Stay tuned to the Marketing Redefined show. Hi, Ashish. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to our show, Marketing Redefined. How are you guys?
I'm great. Thank you so much, Muskan.
And what about you, Catherine?
Great, Muskan. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually really excited about this conversation because, you know, it's really close to my heart, which is luxury marketing. So we have had topics of marketing on this show where we have talked about it because the show is about it, but we haven't really tapped into what luxury marketing is. So before we get into it, I would love to know about the proud parents of Gaia Amore, first of all. So Ashish, tell me something about yourself.
Thanks, Muskan. I'm a business professional. I have close to 30 years experience. It's an equal distribution between India, Africa, and the US in that order. I have essayed many roles, worked across industries. And it was in 2020 that I decided to come back to India. And together between myself and Catherine, we decided that we launch Gaia Amore. And 2 years down the line, here we are. So it's been 2 months since we launched our Web 2 version. We have our products on offer for our clients in the US, Canada, Western Europe. And delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
That's great. As you mentioned, meeting Catherine, we would also love to know more about Catherine. So, and exactly how you landed in India. So tell us something about yourself, Catherine.
I'd like to chalk it up to fate. When I was working at my two previous jobs ago, I actually met someone who helped me understand that my passion is helping people, and he encouraged me to start a nonprofit, which is what I did in 2019 when I left banking. Between then and now, I had worked another engineering job, which is my background. But during that time when I was working on this nonprofit called Bridging Futures, I met Ashish and he became an advisor to me. And during our conversations, I started to learn more about India. And it was just sort of happenstance that I just started meeting all these different Indians. And I wasn't quite sure why, but now I understand. The universe sort of just revealed it all. But in 2020, we were having a conversation about the challenges of fundraising for this nonprofit. And that's sort of where, you know, the idea was proposed that we start something together that could support this nonprofit. And it ended up being in fashion, of all things, which neither one of us really has or had any experience in, but we knew we were passionate about it and we were passionate about helping people. And that's sort of the beginning of the story.
Wow. It reminded me that we are another Indian brand that's added to the list of people that you've met here, brand podcasters, but I guess only good things will come out of it. Coming to the point for which we have gathered here, Gaia Amore. So how did you start it really? Ashish, how did it all started?
A great question, thanks. A lot has gone into it. It's been 2 years in the making, 2 years of market research, 2 years of validating our model, pivoting it, fine-tuning it, to come to a point now where we have a very good idea as to where we are headed. We are taking a step in the domain of sustainable fashion, sustainable luxury fashion, and trying to address the four key issues that we have identified the last 2 years of talking to our target audience, pinpointing it. Four issues being transparency, traceability, certifiability, verifiability. And together with Catherine, with the support, have been able to put together an entire ecosystem of designers, traditional artisans, design DNA, supply chain, and a community building exercise So this is a synopsis of how we started Gaia More. Catherine can add a whole more details to it.
Right. But before we get into the details, I really want to add a quick question, Ashish, that how do you make sure that you stand up to these four pillars? Because, you know, brands always say that they offer this, they have these principles, but somewhere or the other, they don't really stand up to it. So how do you make sure that you and your brand really stand up to it?
Long and short of it is, you can simply go to our Web2 presence, which is a storefront. And if you were to consider buying one of our products, you cannot buy it without knowing the story of the artisan and the hands that made that product, right? So that's how we are very different. So that should give you a hint as to why we are going to be addressing transparency, part of traceability, part of certifiability and verifiability. Why I say partially? Because it's still not deployed on the solution that we want to deploy this in. The solution today exists. It is us having courage of conviction to walk the talk. So right now we have architected or wireframed that solution. All right. We're in the process of looking at partners and investors to invest in the technology in our vision to take it to the market. It's as simple as that. All right. So we have addressed, as I mentioned to you, part of it because Gaia More is going to be a phygital brand. There will be a physical aspect to it, which is our physical product that you can buy, just as you would in any e-commerce capable, you know, platform or in one of our partners who would be, you know, showcasing this in their storefronts in Soho, New York. But you also have the capability of investing in the digital version of our products, essentially 3D renders, dropped as NFTs. And that's where some of the sustainability angle, in fact, comes into our story. I can talk about that later, you know, but so this is how we're trying to address it. Small beginnings for us, but we are headed in the right direction. We have the right kind of interest from accelerators, from potential investors, from advisors, and we'll get there.
I'm pretty sure, but that actually makes me more curious about Gaia More. So, Catherine, is the nonprofit in any way attached to Gaia More? Like, what's the story behind it? And what's the vision behind Gaia More?
It's indirectly attached. I'd say the only real common factor is the people and India. The nonprofit was focused on children's education and working with grassroots organization here in India that are already working with children but need resources. And the idea was that we would work to aggregate the resources that would help amplify the impact that the grassroots organizations are already doing. Instead of creating another nonprofit that works with kids directly. So it's a bit of a hiatus status at this point. As we're building up our resources for Gaia More, we will eventually be leveraging them for Bridging Futures as well. So there are some collaborative efforts that will go into, you know, our artisan communities leveraging Bridging Futures in the future. So that's the sort of the idea there. But as far as Gaia More and what the purpose of it is the preservation of artisan culture is the long and short of it, to use Ashish's words. We're very passionate about India, the preservation of India's culture, and the fact that it's so easy for us as a community, I don't mean India, but just the world, to move forward and forget what it is that we have done. Because it's unless something is relevant to you, it's easy to just either be completely ignorant of it, not by your own choice, but just the fact that you just have no exposure to it. And I feel like in the West, people just don't understand how deep and complex India's culture really is and how much it's contributed to the world and has yet to contribute. Just a prime example is India's love of jewelry. It's so steeped in the culture, but if you tell someone or ask someone in the West about India's jewelry, they would say, I don't know. Or I don't know if I would buy Indian jewelry. I don't know if I trust it. But the reality is that this is where jewelry is made, and it's extravagant. It's extremely complex, and there's hundreds of different types of forms. And all of these things need to be preserved, and they also need to be, you know, told and educated to the world, because that's the only way to ensure the continuation of these skills.
But it really warms my heart that, you know, you don't have any roots here and still you want to preserve this culture. You want to explore these artists and artisans. And that shows in your website as well. Because when I saw, I checked out that you actually have a corner wherein you have these artisans all displayed and everything. So it's really impeccable. But at the same time, now your brand stands in the luxury arena. And me being a marketing enthusiast, I really wanted to know that how is the luxury marketing really different from the normal traditional marketing that we do?
So the defining difference between any other brand versus luxury marketing is all about building a community. And you can only build a community. It's a small niche market. It's never going to be a mass market. Therefore, your product lines are always curated. The promise is that they're made beautifully, they're handcrafted, they're made with love. Now, where we think we are different as Gaia Mori is that we actually have proof. And that proof is validation by having snippets of our artisans who actually made it, or giving a direct introduction of our artisans to the patrons who might be interested in buying our handcrafted leather accessories, our bags, our shoes, our jewelry. So once you have constructed those stories and you present them as part of the Gaia Mori story, it completes the entire picture. So luxury brands do that. Louis Vuitton would do that. Coco Chanel would do that. Gucci would do that. They also have jewelry. And they have stories that talk about their artisans working in workshops and constructing those jewelry pieces. Our stories are different. Our stories are more grassroots. Our stories are realistic in the sense that the design came from us, but the execution of the design into a 9-to-5 sterling silver product was made by a traditional artisan. And we want to present it to the world as is, giving a realistic picture that here is this beautiful product that you can own, okay? But here are the hands that made it. So giving a face and a name, due credit to someone who's actually done it, right? That is our story. So luxury fashion and luxury marketing is very different in the sense that it has to tie down into a complete story. Speaks of the mission, your vision. Hopefully your patrons or your customers see the design DNA in your designs. They can see patterns, right? If you were to go and look at our web store, shopfront, perhaps you would have the eyes and the maturity to see a pattern. The pattern is common through all the products that we currently offer. The pattern is about is talking about twin souls. It is very ethereal. It is very true to Indian traditions. Something we both believe in, and that is the brief that we gave to our silversmiths. That is the brief that we gave to our leather artisans. That is a brief that we gave to our carpet manufacturers, who then converted that into a product that we now offer for our discerning patrons or customers. So that's what I think is luxury fashion and marketing.
And it's actually solving a lot of issues, be it employment or artists getting recognition and paid. I guess that's what every artist dreams, right? Does not matter what the social status they hold. It's really the dream to get recognized. And coming back to Gaia Amore, I guess what I wanted to ask was about these luxury brands, building these luxury brands. So I've interviewed many D2C brands and I've found out that, you know, everyone is building their brand. There are problems that are arising. But at the same time, it is difficult and a lot goes into building a luxury brand. So how did you decide that you want to build a luxury brand out of it, Catherine?
Well, I think the inherent nature of luxury is slow. When you look at any major historically relevant luxury brand, they work with artisans. Whether you call them craftsmen or artisans is sort of irrelevant. They're the same thing. But even if you talk about, you know, the Dior ateliers in France, they're still craftsmen and they do everything by hand. And every bag, every accessory that's made by hand takes time to make. So you can't have a luxury brand using fast fashion techniques. It just doesn't correlate because you don't end up with the same quality. And when you're talking about artisans that carry the legacies of their past, where information and skills are passed down from generation to generation. That is something that fast fashion could never replicate. And that is luxury in and of itself, because every single piece that you make will be different. Even if you have two of the same piece of product, they will still look slightly different. And that's what makes them unique. And in luxury, it's the same thing. You try your hardest to make a product that looks similar to all of the rest. But in slight differentiations, even in leather, is what makes that product so special. And when you tell the stories of where it comes from, like if you watch a YouTube video of how Louis Vuitton makes a bag, it's a story, the tone of voice that they use, the warmth that they're telling the story with, and the emotion that goes into it, and showing, you know, their ateliers' hands as they're creating the bag and they're sewing the seams. It's a lot of effort that goes into it. And that's what we're doing with our artisans. And here in India is very evident. Anywhere that you go, if you go to a trade show, it's just full of artisans that are making everything by hand. And if you go to a market where you have both handmade products and machine-made products, the cost will speak for itself. And you can also see it if you just look at the designs. The designs, the construction, the material that's used. And when an artisan is working with raw materials, they probably won't have access to plasticky type of materials, which they do take certain technological innovation to create. So for artisans here in India, it's much, much easier for them to use raw materials that are organic, because that's what they've always had access to. They know how to have access to them. And it's just within their budget, and they know how to work with them, so they don't have to learn anything new.
Adding a quick question to it, it can be said that your brand is in a direct competition with, you know, brands with years and years of lineage, right? So is it this authenticity that your brand is holding that is differentiating you from them?
Yes, I would say it absolutely is. Our work and our personal selves, actually, our own desire to just be authentic in our own lives has really transferred into the brand. And when you're working with luxury, I think it's important to take everything slowly. It takes a long time, like you said, to build a brand, especially a luxury brand, because you need to bring people into that community. You need to educate them on what it is that you're doing and how you're doing it, why you're doing it, why it's important. And these luxury brands have had a long time to do that. If you look at the story of Gucci, they started out very, very, very small, but they found a small niche community within their own community in Italy. And it was the quality of their products and how they treated their customers that really made the word, you know, spread. And it wasn't like they did mass marketing. They started with a couple of products. They created a story, and half of that story is true, half of it is made up. But nonetheless, it fed into the brand and actually became part of who they were. And now they own that. They own that story. And that's something that takes time to build. It's a legacy that you have to continuously feed into and sort of reinvigorate. So what we're doing is creating our own story, which, while it is luxury, we want to be different than the other brands because we can't compare ourselves. We're not trying to compete with them. Working with our artisans and showcasing our artisans is giving us that authenticity, which doesn't necessarily exist in the luxury brands. And that's fine. We're not asking for them to change who they are. That's up to them. What we're trying to do is set a different precedent and start a new type of luxury, which is actually called new luxury, where you really concentrate on the people behind the products.
Right. One thing you said really stood out for me, that, you know, face value matters, because a luxury brand is nothing without the face of their owner or founder, right? Or their designer, like, for example, Chanel, Coco Chanel, or somebody. These faces really stand out. Without them, the brand is nothing. So I guess that's what matters in a luxury brand. But coming back to luxury, do you think that it has changed the world of online sales? Do you think it has impacted it in any way, Ashish?
Interesting take on that. And thanks for the question. luxury brands, I think, they don't follow pure economics. So just like gold, even when you have a recession, you'll still find people investing in gold. The same goes for luxury brands. So, I mean, you can ascribe any kind of reason to it. That can be a different topic and discussion altogether. You can get technical about it in terms of economics, pure economics. Okay, but I'm just telling you that irrespective of that, nothing ever happens to luxury sales. So you had COVID, for example. We have a looming recession. But all you have to do is check on the numbers that are coming out for the last 2 years. Nothing has impacted them. There would be a tweak in their marketing. All right. I mean, I'm alluding to your last question. How has marketing changed? Has it evolved? I'm just taking a segue into that. There could be a small tweak into it. And that all comes from research. So they have, hopefully, they are using data. I'm a big proponent of using data and working off of data. So it is data which is driving this change, change in content creation, change in messaging, change in product offers, right? Segmentation, for example. Are you, for example, looking at, is Gucci, for example, looking at Gen Z? I'm just making this up. I don't know there, right? Are they looking at empty nesters? Are they looking at Gen Y? So nothing ever has happened to luxury brands. There will always be that niche that understands this is luxury. This is not fast fashion. I invest in it. The value goes up, in fact. I can resell it for a profit and all of that. So those dynamics in luxury fashion brands have never changed, to answer your question.
But I guess it has always been like that, that, you know, fast fashion brands have always been really more confident in online sales. Because I think so, even when I heard from these D2C brands, it was always like this, that, you know, fast fashion, these brands always had it more simpler in terms of selling it online. But at the same time, now luxury brands always had this liberty of choosing retail over online because, you know, they could do as much marketing and get as creative with it as possible. But at the same time, now recession hitting us, you've already talked about it, but how do you think it has impacted us really, Catherine?
There's actually been a lot of research on this. The latest result is that no, it's not really going to. While brands and companies that are more focused on middle income and lower income individuals, they're having to cut their budgets and their projections because obviously inflation, recessions, the middle class and the lower class are the ones that are most easily and most quickly affected by it. The ones that have a lot of disposable income, the upper class with a lot of disposable income, like I said, they're not really affected by it. So, and they still want to maintain that class that they have. They want to be able to show, and that's not to say anything negative about them. It's just who people are. You know, we want to be able to show what we have, what we can afford, what we've worked for. So no, luxury brands are in a very unique position because they are creating and have always been creating a legacy that people want to buy into and they're willing to invest in it because they're part of this story. It means something. If you show up while everyone else is, you know, struggling and you're able to show up and have this unique experience and you're able to afford all these luxury items, that makes you feel different than everyone else. It makes you hold yourself slightly differently. And that's something these luxury brands really understand. They understand their customers and what their customers want. And that customer base is actually growing. It's not just in the US anymore. China is actually the biggest consumer market for luxury goods. And you wouldn't have been able to say that 20, 30 years ago in China. So now that the entire dynamic has changed in China and more people are able to afford, they're going to spend that money.
But where does the difference really lie? Because if we see the consumer behavior, it sort of differs with these normal brands or the luxury brands. So where is the difference? Is it somewhere or the other psychological or is it money that matters?
No, I think it's definitely psychological. Yeah. I don't think humans do anything without thinking through what they're going to do, why they're doing it. We're very strategic that way. And if we have an image, we all have a brand. We're our own personal brand. And we wear clothes and we wear accessories to express that brand, however we build it up. So depending on who you are as a person, that's where you're going to focus your attention, your money, whatever it is that you have. And, you know, they understand that.
Right. Very rightly said. But when we come back to it, I guess there's a funnel that all the brands follow. So what does this funnel look like for luxury brands, Ashish?
Well, that's a very interesting question because that's where I think you have similarities between regular fashion and luxury fashion. It's no more different. It's the inverted funnel. As I mentioned to you, a whole lot of research goes into trying to discern who your audience is. As I mentioned to you, luxury lines are always curated, limited edition. So you have to narrow down to the very bare bones. So you start out with a wider net. Okay, go with the hypothesis, test it out that we've done for the last 2 years. Whittle it down to, you know, demographics, to socioeconomic, you know, levels, benchmarking, all of that, and come down to a small niche. For example, when you talk of us, new luxury, right? And then talk of a new brand like ours, and then a brand that's actually built off of technology, our story becomes even more challenging. So there's a whole lot to tell. There's a whole lot to tell in as concise a manner as possible. So if we are pointing out our audience, for example, to our shop front, all right, the Web 2.0, and I keep on referring to this because I'll come to that in a bit. You may be faulted to think that, oh, we are a brand like any other. We've just gone across to these traditional artisans. We have a design similarity between different product lines, and we are offering these products. Price point is slightly different. What you need to understand essentially, and the onus is on us, is that we have to actually tell the story beyond this physical. We're saying, hey, we are going digital. We would be launching our Web3 store in the metaverse. That's going to happen towards the end of Jan. And in that metaverse, which has got nothing to do with Facebook, you don't need an Oculus or a device to experience it, all right? You would have hyper-reality, a version of our store that you wish to launch next year. So you can go there, you can interact with what we have there. You can interact with our digital versions, our NFTs. You can buy our jewelry pieces right off that store. You can buy physical products right off the store. For example, you go there as a person, you can browse through what we have on offer. All the products would be on display. When you browse on it and you mouse over, you would have a link taking you back to the Web 2 experience, which you're comfortable with, right? So so the question was the funnel. The funnel looks exactly like it would in any other brand. I think the difference is that there's a whole lot of effort that's put into building your community. There's a whole lot of focus on content creation, on evangelizing. So going and talking to as many people as possible, talking about our vision, our mission, our passion. And that has to come through very, very clearly before that niche audience actually sees it. And they gravitate towards you. They want to know more about your story. They come to your online presence, your social media assets. Then perhaps, you know, they are more attuned to what we have to offer and invest in our products.
Got it. But that makes me even more curious in terms of marketing, you know, when it comes to social media marketing. I think so that brands really place themselves differently when it comes to, there's also a differentiation between normal brands and luxury brand. So you being a new luxury brand, how do you place yourself on social media? And now this question could be answered by any of you guys.
You want to go, Katrin?
All right. So right now we're just using Instagram and Facebook. We figured that Instagram is the most usable and user-friendly option because everyone knows and understands how it works. We have not yet gotten into TikTok, but that is something that we have to. I have never actually been on TikTok at all, so I don't even know what it looks like. But I do know that a lot of brands are on there doing really, really well. Majority because it is Gen Z driven. And Gen Z has the largest spending capacity right now, which has become very evident, and that's a good thing for them. But it also gives an opportunity because these luxury brands are able to create a lot of quick, short content, or they can create a lot of content, which they just show snippets of in various different, you know, platforms. But I think it depends on the type of audience that they're trying to advertise to. I would say more creative types might use Pinterest. And that is a huge point of leverage if you're trying to, like I was telling you before, build a personal brand, because you're able to see so many different different types of brands, projections of different dresses and accessories, and put them all kind of together to figure out what it is that you like yourself so much.
Wow. That's actually great, you know, because I guess social media is a platform that wherein you can actually place anything, right? You can place out your ideology. You can actually tell anything about your brand, and it really sells because, you know, brands need that variety. Brands need to stand out, and social media is the best place to do it because, as you also mentioned, us Gen Zs, you know, the largest chunk which is on social media is the Gen Z, right? So we actually need some variety. We are very spontaneous when it comes to that. But sadly, coming to an end, this question is, I guess, for both of you, and I would love to know both of your views, really, that, you know, how do you exactly make sure that Gaia Amore maintains its exclusivity amongst the sea of fashion brands? Because there are brands, tons of brands dealing in it. But at the same time, how do you maintain that exclusivity? Starting with you, Ashish.
I think the answer to that is that we'll be true to our passion and our mission and vision. If we have invested our time and our thoughts into constructing this entire process, which includes leveraging technology to walk the talk on being transparent, addressing traceability and certifiability, verifiability in what we offer, we'll be in here for the long haul. And I just want to make a point here that this technology that we are developing is not exclusive to us. So this technology would be available to any other brand, any other designer that wishes to avail of what we have to offer, to be more transparent and to offer the same promise to their own customers. That's the whole idea.
I would say even more, what makes us exclusive in our own right is the fact that if you're working with artisans, it takes time to do everything by hand. And let's just take our earring collection, for example. We had 8 artisans working on the 7 earrings that we have. So that's not a lot of people working on one order. So in its own right, even if we order a large quantity, it would take an enormous amount of time to do that. So the exclusivity is the quantity of products that we have. We are never going to be producing thousands of a single product, a single style. It's just not going to happen. The reason why we don't want that is because we want the artisans to continue to innovate, to create new designs, to leverage their past, to create a fusion of different cultures if that's what they want to do. We want them to give them free rein to stay true to their nature and true to their core without us dictating to them what they should be doing. Because that's stifling their creativity, and we never want to do that. We only want to preserve their culture and want to give it back to them and give them a platform to be able to really showcase the creativity and then the history that that culture has, whether it's here in India or in Peru or Russia or wherever it may be.
But that's beautiful, really. You know, that's what exactly Gaia Amore stands for, right? Because it's good that there's a transparency between not only your consumers and you, but also with the artisans that you're working with. So I guess coming to the last question, now 2023 has just started out, and on this show itself, me and my in-house marketing expert Deepak really talked about it and really fleshed out what the marketing strategies should look like for brands in 2023 with the trends and everything. So how does it look for you guys?
I think for us, it looks very promising. As I mentioned to you, we have the layout for a technology that we want to deploy. One aspect of it I already mentioned, which is Web 3.0, we would have a presence there and we are very excited about it. It should be launching mostly by end of the month or first week of February. And that is a new experience that we want to offer to our patrons, right? following that, Catherine has been working on an exclusive IP, intellectual property of ours, which is the social audit framework that we want to convert into, again, technology. We have identified the third-party social audit team that will do the social audit for our artisans, go and meet up with them in person. All the research and findings of that team would be available on the blockchain. That would be accessible to anyone on a permissioned blockchain, right? So we want to convert all of this into the tech that will actually drive our business forward. And we are very excited about the various conversations that we've had with our potential partners. They're all designers. They're all partners in different countries all over the world. Just to qualify, because we've been talking a whole lot about India because we've started from India, but Gaia More is a global platform. The stories of our artisans resonate with the same artisan communities in Morocco, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Russia. It's just the same. You know, they have the same challenges. Their socioeconomic, standards would be different. We agree, but they have the same challenges. They are under threat of extinction, thanks to whatever reason. We're not getting into all that. But we want to make a change. We want to encourage these people so that their age-old traditions and craftsmanship and skills are passed on to generation, and the generations are gravitating towards taking this to the next generation.
That's beautiful. And I guess even I believe that there's an amalgamation of these two, technology and marketing. They actually go hand in hand. And especially these days, if a brand believes that, you know, with traditional marketing, they'll be able to solve it all, I don't think so, because that's really not moving ahead with the times, with the changing times. So I think it's really necessary to have these both together when it comes to building your brand. So ending on this note, thank you so much, Ashish and Catherine, for gracing us on this show. It was lovely talking to you guys.
Thanks for having us, Muskan. Really appreciate it.